number 4, U.S. versus Glosser, 084015.
Mr. Miller. At that table.
First time.
Mm-hmm.
May it please the court. Counsel, Eugene Miller on behalf of the United States. The United States here requests that this court reverse the sentence imposed by the district court and remand for resentencing because the district court committed procedural sentencing error by announcing the sentence it would impose prior to calculating the advisory guidelines, prior to hearing the arguments of the parties, and prior to thoughtful...
Essentially, you think you talk too much.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that in announcing the sentence, he violated the clear procedural rules of this court. Courts certainly have great discretion post-Booker in determining the appropriate sentence. And perhaps because of that discretion, it is important that courts follow the appropriate procedure in determining that sentence. In this case, the court announced the sentence it intended to impose at the end of the change of plea proceeding prior to the calculation of the advisory guideline range, which is the first step the courts must undertake, and prior to hearing the arguments of the parties and considering the Section 3553A factors, which is the second step the court must take. Here, the court stated repeatedly the sentence it intended to impose at the end of a change of plea proceeding that took place really unexpectedly on the first day of a scheduled jury trial. And as the court told the defendant during that change of plea proceeding, at that time it had no idea what the advisory guideline range was or would be. It had not heard any arguments from the parties as to sentencing. It had not undertaken any thoughtful consideration of the 3553A factors. And the only evidence before the court at that time was the indictment itself and the factual basis that was presented during the change of plea proceeding as a basis for the plea, other than repeated filings that had been made by the defendant himself during the proceedings. And the defendant's announcement here was not equivocal. It stated that it promised to impose a sentence of 10 years, the minimum sentence to the defendant, and when the United States objected to that statement, indicating that it had not decided what sentence it would be recommending, the court noted to the United States, I fully expect you'll ask for more, and I fully expect I'll find a reason not to give it to you.
Now, was there some pre-knowledge? The judge, I thought, gave some indication that he knew this defendant pretty well or something. He knew a lot of the background and everything was already known, I guess.
He made a statement that he'd heard more in this case than perhaps any other case he had had. And I think that was the record shows that was based on filings the defendant himself had made. The defendant had gone through a number of attorneys, had proceeded pro se for a period of time. He had appealed the magistrate judge's detention order, and the district court had decided rather than review that order, the district court would conduct a new detention hearing. And that hearing lasted, I believe it was 3 separate days that hearing went based on the defendant's motion. So, and then while the defendant was pro se, the defendant had other filings before the court. So the court had heard a lot from the defendant regarding his position in the case. The court had heard little from the United States regarding his position other than the factual basis that was presented at the change of plea and the indictment that was presented.
Now when you after he said he'd impose the 10 years, and this is when the government first commented, did you tell the court you objected to the court taking a position on sentencing yet, that it might be error to engage in that?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the record, what the prosecutor said, I was the prosecutor in the lower court, said was wanted to clarify with the judge, because when he first said, I believe the way he said it initially was 10 years is the minimum sentence, and that would be the sentence I would impose. That was the first statement. And the prosecutor stood up and said, I just want to be clear, Judge, or that when you stated this, that you're saying that's the sentence you think you might impose, because we haven't taken a position as to what sentence. And when it got to that point, the court interrupted and said, I fully understand that you're going to ask for a sentence of more than 10 years, and I fully expect I'll find a reason not to give it to you. And then to attempt to clarify a little bit, the prosecutor noted, well, we just want to make sure the court isn't preventing the government from presenting evidence at sentencing as a cue that we do intend to present evidence at sentencing. And the court's response was, oh, no, you can present it, you can make your record. And then essentially, as is listed in the brief, noted, then after I impose a sentence of 10 years, you'll have the opportunity to appeal that sentence. So as we noted in our brief, we do believe that we raised that objection, gave the district court an opportunity in the best way, at least that we knew how, to cure that error, and that the court was aware of the United States' position and declined to correct the error. Even as an additional step after the hearing and trying to determine how to proceed, we filed a motion to clarify Rule 11 proceeding with the court. Actually, the United States expected that when the pre-sentence report was filed, that ultimately recommended a sentence of 188 to 235 months. The defendant himself might object and state that the court had stated it would impose a sentence of 120 months. The defendant did not do that, and to hopefully avoid issues later, the United States filed at that time a motion to clarify the prior proceedings to state that one could read the court's prior comments as promising a specific sentence, that that would not be appropriate, and to have the court inform the defendant that the court could impose any sentence from 10 years to life. The court then at the sentencing hearing did not directly address that motion, although it did note in its docket entry that it had addressed the issue and that the defendant's plea was not induced by that promise.
That was the only comment on that motion that you made.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. When the sentencing hearing came around, and we suppose it could have been, and we've argued in our brief that it's not harmless. There could have been harmless error if the district court had not felt tied to the sentence it had previously promised prior to knowing the information it needed to know, or if the guidelines were below 120 months, the government would have recommended 120 months and it would have been a harmless error. We wouldn't be here. But as it turns out, the pre-sentence report advised a range of 188 to 235 months. The United States recommended a sentence of 210 months, and the court ultimately did do what it said it would do at the prior sentencing proceeding, which was imposed a sentence of 121 months. That sentence was based, as we note in there, was based on certain findings that we believe were not supported by the record. The court spent a considerable amount of time at the sentencing hearing, finding of the probation officer in the government's position that the defendant had accepted responsibility for his conduct. And we know that courts have great discretion in determining whether a defendant has accepted responsibility. But in this record, there just really is not evidence to support that finding. As we detail, the plea was, as we noted, on the morning of trial. It was a last-minute plea. Prior to that, the defendant, at that detention hearing, had denied guilt repeatedly. Immediately after the change of plea, as was contained in the pre-sentence report, he had told the deputy U.S. Marshal, "I just pleaded guilty to get rid of this. I didn't do anything." When the probation officer interviewed him, he said, "I've never seen methamphetamine before," prompting the probation officer to state to the court, "He has lied so many times to so many people, I believe he may be a pathological liar."
Let me get back, though, for a minute. As you said, you pointed out to the court this error, and you said that if he had imposed, if the guideline range had been up to 120 months, you wouldn't have objected. I'm just curious, has this happened before where a promise is made as to sentence and then the government doesn't pursue it on appeal? Are you aware of that?
I am not aware of unequivocal statement as in this case, where the court unequivocally stated what sentence it would impose and then essentially imposed that sentence at sentencing.
What's the solution? What do you want us to do?
We're asking for you to remand this case for resentencing. I do believe that given the nature of the error that it would be appropriate for Circuit Rule 36 to apply on.
What about the guilty plea?
Well, we don't believe there's any issue with the guilty plea. When you look at the record,
he pleaded guilty because he knew he was going to get a lower sentence.
I think the record shows that was not the case. He showed up the morning of the trial intent on pleading guilty. It was after the conclusion of all the required Rule 11 admonitions that the district court unilaterally stated and promised that it would impose a sentence of 10 years. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Miss Idy?
Kind of shocked for you to be on that side, too.
I know. I'm coming from the right side, but...
thank you, Your Honors. I beg your pardon?
Where will it all end?
Well, I am teaching at the law school, so I hope to lend some of my... something I learned here to tell the students. Good morning, Your Honors. I think the government's argument in this case is inconsistent logically. Rule 11 makes clear in the very words that a violation of Rule 11 can be harmless. The government states in its opening brief that the error was not harmless as it affected the guilty plea, but it was harmless as it affected the sentence. In the government's reply brief, the government says it's not challenging the reasonableness of the sentence. Well, the only way it could be a harmful error is if the sentence is unreasonable. Now, the government does take quite a lot of time in its brief arguing that the sentence was unreasonable, and I guess the inference they're trying to have you draw is it's therefore harmful error and should be reversed. But if the sentence is reasonable, and I think the sentence in this case was reasonable, and I think the court supported its sentence on a variety of reasonable grounds, then what is the error? There is no error. So I don't understand the government's argument, because it's clear there's no case that says a Rule 11 violation is automatic reversal. On the contrary, it says it's subject to the harmless error analysis.
Is your position then also that he didn't plead guilty because he knew he was going to get a lower sentence?
Well, that's a different question.
Well, that's my question.
Yes. I think let me just say this. The defendant is not appealing this case because the defendant got what he was promised. Now, if the case...
The comment that the government's complaining about occurred after the plea of guilty, after the Rule 11 admonitions had been completed.
It was about halfway through it. It really came up when he was going over the penalties, and then...
But the conversation occurred before the defendant indicated after the defendant indicated he wanted to withdraw his plea of not guilty and enter a plea of guilty.
Yes, and then during the plea colloquy, one of the things that the court goes through is, do you understand the penalties in this case? The penalties are, and the court said, 5 to 40, and they're like, no, wait a minute, it's 10 to 40. And so... During the process of the judge ensuring that it was a knowing and voluntary plea, it was clear that the defendant did not understand the statutory minimum sentence. I think this case would be obviously a lot more troubling for everyone if the court had promised the defendant 120 months and then sentenced him to 150 months. Because one of the fundamental core reasons that Rule 11 prohibits the courts from participating in plea agreements, the primary one is it puts too much pressure on a defendant to plead guilty. I mean, that's the main one. The other two that are cited in the Krauss case are the appearance of impropriety or just plain impartiality. But it is absolutely clear in the law that this violation, and I can't deny it's a violation, is subject to harmless error. And if there is no error, as the government concedes, in the guilty plea itself, then the only place there could be the error is in the sentencing. And if the sentence is reasonable, it doesn't matter anymore under the law that there was procedural error.
Let me go back for a minute, Ms. Idy, because there's a long question and answer and comment by the court about the whole 10 years, and eventually the defendant says 10 years is a long time. The court says 10 years is a long time. That's what my promise is. It's a long time. The defendant understands the court has promised him to a minimum mandatory sentence of 10 years. What else occurred in the plea colloquy after that? Was there any other questions put to him? You know, is this voluntary? Had everything else been done and then
Then later the court again asks him, did anybody promise you anything? Now, you know, that leaves the kind of begs the question, well, anybody other than me promise you anything? But, I mean, the point here is that we're not challenging. The issue before this court is not the voluntariness of the plea. The government concedes that it was voluntary. The government states in its appeal that it was voluntary. In footnote 8, I think it is on page 25. So the only thing left for this court to review, and the defendant is not complaining about the fact that he got an extra month. So that really the only thing left for this court to review is whether it was harm, if it was error, whether the harm was in the sentencing. And if the sentencing is reasonable, the cases are clear that procedural error is harmless. Now, there are, you know, I know it troubles the court that the judge made this comment, but I know the court has other ways of dealing with judges.
Such as?
Well, I suppose, I don't mean to suggest anything here, but I'm sure you could give him a call.
What?
Give him a call, write him a letter,
no.
Admonish him
I'm
in some way.
I'm not putting any opinion. Shut up.
Well, the court has ways of dealing with issues with that, but it doesn't mean that this is reversible error. I think it's just clear in the law, and I understand the court's concern about this kind of comment. But the law is that it is harmless error. If the court determines that the sentence was reasonable, and if you think, I mean, just take a look at this case. This is the first offense for drug violations on an undercover operation. The guy gets 10 years. It's a huge sentence, and the judge thought it was a huge sentence from the get-go. The judge who listened to 3 days of detention hearings, which I might add, you hear the kind of evidence in a detention hearing that you would hear in a sentencing hearing. You hear about their prior record, their prior conduct, all of those things. So the judge maybe was being too honest, had pretty much everything he needed to know that this sentence of 10 years was enough.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's go back to your hypothetical, because you said obviously if he'd been promised the 10 years and then received a sentence of 150, you know, you'd be here complaining about that. And that would be because the court broke its promise, and wouldn't you be arguing that that was a fundamental defect in the plea process?
I think if that had happened, the defendant would be arguing that there was harm in the guilty plea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not arguing. The government concedes it, and that's the defendant is not arguing that.
So just in terms of our jurisprudence here in the Seventh Circuit, you know, what rule, let's assume we're still with your hypothetical, what rule would you want us to adopt? You know, because the impact of allowing this to occur, you know, doesn't this sort of open the door to other judges?
Well, I don't think you would. I think you're not allowing it to occur. You're not, any more than you're allowing, when you say harmless error, you're not saying it's okay to do it. You're just saying, in this case, it was error, but in this particular case, it was harmless. It's not, you're not condoning the error. And I'm sure the court can fashion some pretty strong language in the opinion or however it wants to do it to admonish all district courts that they can't do this. I mean, because truly it does give the appearance of impropriety. But that doesn't make it reversible error.
Well, one thing you wouldn't want, I think, as they were recommending, well, this would be remanded only for resentencing, but to a different judge. You sure don't want that, right?
Well, that would create a, I mean...
Well, no. Seriously, if it were remanded and assigned to a different judge and the judge gave him 150 whatever, then you got a problem on the guilty plea.
You're right.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm my problem.
No,
I'm having a problem seeing how to reconcile this. Maybe
well,
we can all
I mean,
call
the
it
courts talk about meaningless remands. Well, if you remand it to Judge McCuskey, you know what sentence you're going to get.
Right.
If you remand it to another judge, you have a different problem. But I just go really back to the focal point of the argument is it's harmless error. I know you don't like it. I don't like it. Nobody likes the comment. But if the sentence is reasonable, the cases are clear, then any procedural error is harmless. And the sentence was reasonable. So I'd ask the court to affirm the judgment of the district court, unless the court has any other questions.
I don't think so. Thank you, Ms. Heidi.
Thank you.
We'll just start with that. You wanted to remand with a different judge.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Don't we have then a problem?
I don't believe we do at all, Your Honor. There is no Rule 11 violation here. That's not been alleged. The change of plea colloquy took place appropriately, so the defendant wanted to plead guilty. Everyone, the court was ready for trial. The government was ready for trial. He wanted to plead guilty. He indicated that. When there was discussion of penalties, there was no promise of the judge of a specific sentence. After what Judge Williams read, nothing else took place in the record. It was a unilateral promise from the district judge after the completion of everything necessary under Rule 11. It was after that unilateral promise that After the Rule 11 took place, that the promise was made. So the error is regarding sentencing, not the change of plea. The defendant has never asked to withdraw his plea. The court gave him that opportunity at the sentencing hearing. He refused it again there. He has not appealed his change of plea. There is no change of plea issue. The only question here is sentencing. And the United States completely disagrees that just because a sentence could be argued to be substantively reasonable, that we throw procedural reasonableness out the window. This is not harmless error. This is error that the court undertook by promising a sentence and then imposing that sentence. It cannot be allowed to stand. And a fresh set of eyes should be allowed to look at this after considering the guidelines, the arguments of the parties, and the Section 3553A factors.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
You.
And Ms. Ide, you were appointed. And I thank you for your fine representation of your client, and Mr. Miller for your fine representation of the government. We will take the case under advisement. And